You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Myopia Defender Childhood. This week we respond to an episode, which we don't usually do much. We actually had National Treasure on the... I guess, on the docket, but we moved it up in honor of how bizarre Tomb Raider was. We don't usually talk topically, of course, because these are kind of evergreen, but I just want to make it clear that on the episode, we were right. After, you know, a week almost out, Tomb Raider is being buried. As of the recording, it only has made back less than $24 million domestically as part of a $94 million budget. If you combine international, it's just made a profit, but Black Panther is still in control of the board. So, yeah, we were right. National Treasure was on for a long time. It's one of my wife's favorites. And to be honest, I enjoyed it. You'll hear on the episode, but Daniel didn't because he's a party pooper. If you're interested in history, I do a podcast that came out this week. I was a guest on Professor Buzzkill, so look up there. Other than that, you know, Cineprov, first Thursday of the month. But unlike usual, this time it's going to be on a Saturday, which I know has happened recently. But they're doing an interesting movie, Prisoners of the Lost Universe, so go see them there. You know, and I'll be in the audience with you guys. Have a beer afterwards if you're interested. Thanks.
Do you wake up in the middle of the night with cold sweats thinking about professional wrestling?
Have you ever done the Ric Flair strut thinking no one was watching but they were? Woo!
Have you ever binge-watched 18 hours of The Ultimate Warrior only to want more?
If the answer is yes, then do we have the cure for you?
The Pro Wrestling Roundtable.
We talk about the past, present, and future of professional wrestling, brother.
We review wrestling movies and even jump in a time machine to review past wrestling events.
You can find us on iTunes and www.theprowrestlingroundtable.com.
Also on Twitter at @podcastpwr.
Also join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/ESOPro.
We bring the squared circle to the round table.
Welcome to Miami Defender Childhood. This week, we are, I guess, recording on St. Patrick's Day, but...
Nick's already drunk.
We're talking about another national tradition, other than beating up the Irish, which is National Treasure, which I personally like to think Nick Cage is our national treasure.
Oh, totally.
It's definitely not John Wayne. Although this has a pretty good cast of old people actors.
Both national treasures too. I mean, the second one's got Ed Harris and Helen Mirren in it, and then
This one has Harvey Keitel
and Christopher Plummer.
I looked it up and I'm like, how is Chris Plummer? Oh, it's Chris Plummer. Like, it's almost like a secret Chris Plummer. It was originally Kevin Spacey.
Oh, right. You know, we got an Oscar nomination just for that one scene.
I wanted him to win so bad just out of spite. I love a good Spite Academy Award. Unfortunately, this is Daniel and I, which is only unfortunate because that means we're going to dick around most of the time.
Pretty much.
Yeah, Daniel and I are notorious dicking arounders. Also, there's a St. Patty's Day party going on, so we're going to be loud, and that's okay.
Oh, your baby is already getting into it.
We're still going to record. This is a standard episode. National Treasure. Daniel.
It sucked.
Oh, how dare you. This is fun. I love it.
Oh, no. Well, anyway, I actually did something I usually don't do, which is I looked up Ebert's old review of this.
Oh, yeah. What'd he say?
Well, he spent half of it, like, comparing it to the Da Vinci Code and railing against about how bad the Da Vinci Code was, which at the time was still just a book, right? They hadn't made the movie yet.
Sure.
And I'm, like, going, you know, I remember reading the Da Vinci Code in high school, and even back then I could think, You know that whole code breaking thing? That's based on a mistake you made in your research. So,
and a book that he half plagiarized from right. Holy Blood, Holy Grail, or whatever it was.
Well, I mean, it's basically a lowbrow Umberto Eco, right? Like Folcutt's Pendulum, that sort of thing.
Yeah. And I mean, okay, so here's the thing. This is John Turteltaub's attempt at being a Disney director.
Well, the script is like a spec script that somebody wrote when they were 15 and they used it to break in. And then I guess Jerry Bruckheimer found it's like, we can make this into a movie. Nick Cage will say yes.
I mean, and Nick Cage will say yes.
By the way, for those wondering, I'm still kind of getting over laryngitis sort of thing. So if I sound like I'm slowly being strangled, that's why.
I mean, it could be that this movie was great and you're slowly being choked on your own crepulence as well.
Oh, that's possible. That's usually the standard for me, though. So,
didn't he direct Turteltaub? I'm just looking at his filmography. He's directed Nick Cage a few times, actually, because he also did the sequel to this, and he did The Sorcerer's Apprentice, which is Nick Cage.
He did something before this that was apparently a big deal.
He did Phenomenon with Travolta.
Which is
almost a big deal. I think it's more of a big deal for the soundtrack, where Eric Clapton sang Change the World, right? If I can change the world. That's the most 1996 song, other than probably Semi-Charmed Kind of Life.
Except that one's still fun. Do, 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 do.
Oh, also stay tuned. He did both Cool Runnings and Three Ninjas.
He did Three Ninjas.
He did Three Ninjas and Cool Runnings and While You Were Sleeping and Phenomena. And The Kid.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, no kidding. Although something he did that I liked, I didn't realize was him. He did an episode of the miniseries From the Earth to the Moon, which is that Tom Hanks one.
Oh, that was good. Yeah. I remember that back in the day.
So I guess we've been talking already for a few minutes. We should get into the actual plot synopses.
Do we need to?
I guess. All right. So tell me about this plot, Daniel.
Okay, well, it's kind of basically lighthearted InfoWars and the fact that it's all about Freemasons and the Knights Templar and the founding of America. I mean, I kind of wanted Alex Jones to show up and, like, have a heart attack at some point in this movie.
An Alex Jones cameo?
Yeah. Well, he made a cameo in a couple of Richard Linklater movies back in the day. I'm pretty sure he was in Waking Life. But anyway, this movie features Ben Franklin Gates, that's Nick Cage, who's Gates, member of the Gates family, and they're a very long American family line that has been searching for a treasure that was hidden in secret by the Freemasons and the Knights Templar, who just so happened to include a lot of the forefathers in America. So he's looking for a bunch of clues to find the treasure, and he actually has to assemble a team at the start to search for it and look for it. But one of the members of his team, and that's Sean Bean, who has the most glorious mullet I've ever seen, betrays him and starts to go looking for the treasure himself, which includes stealing the Declaration of Independence and doing a whole bunch of stuff. So Nick Cage plots a plan to beat Sean Bean and find the treasure before he can.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, so I get that you don't like this movie because it involves having fun, but
Well, surely you all know what laughter sounds like.
But like, okay, so this Nick Cage movie, as it plays, is, I mean, last week literally came Lara Croft Tomb Raider. We did that because
we'll say this is better than Lara Croft Tomb Raider by a lot.
I will also say it's better than Da Vinci Code.
It's more fun than Da Vinci Code.
I mean, who would you rather watch as a leading man in that kind of movie? Like, I get that, like, if you're talking about the Booksmart Indiana Jones side of things, yeah, you want Tom Hanks. But if you want the goofy running through things and, like, I mean, he essentially shows up in a Leaving Las Vegas outfit at the beginning of this movie. He has, like, the whitest lapels you've ever seen.
Oh, okay, bear with me here. But what if this is, in fact, an extended drunken nightmare by his character in Leaving Las Vegas?
It would make sense. I mean, like, that's the only way this plot kind of works. It's like a drunken fever dream of a crazy man just like, I mean, like, when his line is literally, the map is on the back of the Declaration of Independence, and you're just like, I realize my Nick Cage in this movie is going to sound a bit like Keanu Reeves, but
they kind of do sound similar, except Nick Cage can actually act.
Hey, man, those John Wick, well, does action movies count as acting?
I mean, he's fine in the John Wick movies, but I wouldn't say that they're necessarily him acting.
It's like the same as Point Break. Like, I want you to play a surfer, but at first you have to be reluctant about surfing. So the acting is in the reluctance, right? Like, can you pretend like you know Kung Fu? Well, I can say I know Kung Fu.
That was pretty good.
Hey.
What do you think of the opening scene? Because Christopher Plummer's in this movie for one scene.
That's the Disney scene. That's how you know it's a Disney movie.
Yeah.
Like him as a kid. Okay, so it starts out with Ben Franklin Gates up in the attic of his grandfather's house. And his grand, and he
his
like
his grandfather's this, John Adams Gates, right?
John Adams Gates. Good at like American patriot names. Whatever. I know. But effectively, he discovers some of his grandfather's old papers and stuff. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, you know, what's this? And Plummer's like, I told you never to come up here. And he goes, well, what is this? Well, I was looking for the greatest treasure in American history. And then a very CGI John Voight shows up.
Yeah. Oh, him in that wig.
It's the wiggiest wig that ever.
Well, still, that was back when John Voight still was just holding on to his last bit of dignity before that just went off the rails.
Well, I mean, let's not forget that last week we did a movie where he talks to his now estranged daughter for all of a scene and a half.
You know, I just had this feeling after Angie and Brad got divorced that he was still hanging out in Brad Pitt's basement until Brad kicked him out.
They actually have a lot more they can agree on now that they've gotten a divorce.
I'm sure that was one of the things he cited. Angie, your dad keeps coming around here and I don't like him.
Yeah, well, now neither of them like her very much. I was walking down the grocery aisle to pick up some milk for the baby, and there's like an already like, Angelina Jolie getting married again. I'm just like, guys, can you leave anyone alone for a second and a half, man? Whatever. So we should dance to this movie. After the very Disney scene where a kid is learning about his past and trying to grow up.
And gets knighted by Christopher Plummer.
Exactly. We do a smash cut to the Arctic, right. Where they're looking for a ship called the Charlotte.
Yeah.
And
that's where the secret lies.
No.
Because they found that on a piece of paper. And this is just that kind of movie.
Yeah, this is literally just that kind of movie where, like, again, Da Vinci Code is a movie that came out and it's like ancient biblical stories as though the Bible isn't the most studied thing ever. And then the thing that always frustrates me about these kinds of movies is Indiana Jones, there's a reason. He's trying to prevent the Nazis from getting something.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the idea that all of a sudden Tom Hanks, after being just a normal guy for, you know, 30 years of his career, is like, I have to get to the bottom of this Vatican conspiracy, which people have been working on for millennia.
Ever since there was a Vatican?
I have to figure it out in like a day and a half because of blank. Fine. Whatever. But I mean, again, there's nothing studied more in American history since the day it happened than the Declaration of Independence. Like, all this stuff is, like, they use a series of letters at one point that Ben Franklin wrote.
This is what pisses me off about the movie, because it pretends like all those little trivia factoids of America's founding fathers are somehow these big revelations that the audience didn't know. Like, I heard about the Silas Duguid letters when I was in the third grade. Doesn't know about those.
Well, but even if you don't know that, like, I will give this movie credit in that it never stops on those things. The movie is just like a smidge over 2 hours. It's like 2:05. And I mean, it goes like a rocket ship, right? Like, there's not a lot of time where they're standing around doing nothing. So it feels okay. Like, at one point, there's supposed to be a budding romance between Nick Cage and the woman who's in charge of the National Archives.
Who is also that German actress from Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah, Diane Kruger. But the thing is, like, it moves.
I love for a Disney scene where they implied when they showed her in a dressing room and they basically said, she's topless behind those doors. I'm like, oh, Disney.
I mean, this is literally John Turteltaub arguing for, like, inches of screen, right? Like,
Okay, how low do the doors have to be? How low can I make the doors to satisfy the Disney board of directors?
Let me catch up the movie just really quick. When they're on this frozen ship, the Charlotte, they find, like, this weird kind of ivory pipe.
What's that called?
It's supposed to be scrimshaw, which is from whale.
Right.
It's a scrimshaw pipe is what it is. But
A meerschaum pipe.
There you go. Scrimshaw is what it's made of. Excuse me. But what ultimately it is he starts thinking back to the clue that led them there and then realizes that most likely it has to do with the Declaration of Independence. Mm-hmm. There's an explosion because it's a Turtle Top movie.
Do you remember that episode of South Park where they go and meet this computer programmer who always, like, gets the right answer, but it's through, like, this very, very long, convoluted thought process where they're, like, asking questions like, of course, eggs.
Yes.
Eggs. Nobody's talking about eggs. Eggs come from chicken,
yeah.
And chicken are served at KFC, and KFC was founded by Colonel Sanders. That's what that seems like.
Well, this is the Alex Jones part of it. Like, this is frogs becoming gay because of, like, fruit juice or whatever it is, of juice boxes.
They're putting chemicals in the water that turn the freaking frogs gay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You need to sound fatter. And
you're welcome, Nicholas.
And try convincing people that you can make a bulletproof bath.
Well, I can.
Yeah, right. I think he's, according to his Wikipedia or whatever, according to his profile, he's like 37 years old, which is a whole cracker shit.
So was Tommy Wiseau.
Yeah, right. Well, his hair might be 37. Whatever hobo he stole that from. Okay, so effectively, Nick Cage realizes that the thing to do then is that the map, whatever this map is on the back of the Declaration of Independence. So through a series of things, including flirting with Abigail Chase, who's the doctor, who's the professor, the PhD in transnational.
I like his sidekick in this movie because that's pretty much what I would be in this movie.
Justin Bartha. And that's why this is why when we did Tomb Raider, I rearranged the schedule. He even has the same kind of team where there's a nerdy tech guy played by Justin Bartha. Again, like Laura Croft. I mean, here's the thing. I know I'm not being sexist here. You could find an interesting woman to do this, but Nick Cage is better than Angelina Jolie any day in these movies. And she's a passable action star, but the part when she's like looking at the wall and being like, oh, of course this is going to be this, this, and this. Nick Cage is like literally holding up a bottle of water and being like, this $100 bill's telling me something. And you're just like, of course it is Nick Cage. But effectively, after a very... Actually, this reminded me of Mission Impossible, the first one with Tom Cruise, where they're at the embassy dinner, and he's, like, doing little things to do little things, to steal a face, to do the thing. That's what this dinner at the National Archives reminded me of.
Oh, when he somehow bullshits his way into that National Archives party.
And that's, you know, when Emilio Estevez dies, when he's crushed to death in that elevator that has needles at the top for some reason. Yeah. That's what it reminded me of.
Those are needles. Those are what catches the elevator.
He looks up and gets penetrated through his head, which might be the best way that Emilio Estevez died, except for when he got AIDS in Mighty Ducks 3.
Stay tuned.
Whatever.
We should back up a little bit because there's a long scene beforehand where it was Sean Bean who was suggesting they steal the Declaration of Independence in the map, and Ben was against it.
Yeah.
And then he changes his mind because apparently the only way to save it is to steal it. And they come up with this elaborate plan when they're in the Library of Congress and they find the blueprints and stuff.
No.
It's actually not a half bad heist little sequence.
Well, and it's neat because he does everything right. He goes to the FBI and the DC police and they just don't believe him. He's like, well, I guess we have to steal it first.
Yeah. Oh, except for that one bit. Where the password to get into the super secret storage area is Valley Forge.
And Nick Cage is just listening to the letters. And I mean, I will give him this. This movie isn't filled with him crazily knowing things, right? Because essentially, I want to say Ben Whishaw, because it's Q from Bond, effectively.
Yeah.
But what Riley, Justin Bartha, is saying is like, here are all the possible things with the letters she's used. Blah, 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 blah. And one of them is Valley Forge. And he's like, Valley Forge. Like, he gets it. So, like, he's just quicker than other people, but he's not, like, impossibly brilliant, which I give this movie credit for, because, like, that's the problem with... I don't like Ron Howard as a director. He's not bad. He just doesn't really add anything. Like, if you showed me 100 movies, I would be hard-pressed to push what he added to a movie.
He's definitely an old-school Hollywood director in that regard, where he's just like, all right, I'm here to do a job. I'll show up on set. I'll say action. I'll say cut. And that's about all.
Which is why he's a good fixer for a broken movie, but doesn't necessarily add a lot. But, like, that was the thing with, like, him directing Tom Hanks. I believe that Tom Hanks could know anything he wants, which is why he did so well in Apollo 13. But in those, like, Da Vinci Code movies, he just seems to pull shit out of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck it. Like, I mean, honestly, like, it bothers the hell out of me because, again, these are, like, that's why I like that they added Abigail Chase, because Dr. Chase is someone who studied this her whole life, and so she starts picking it up, and then you're like, oh, yes, she's another expert who would know stuff. Whatever. So they steal the Declaration of Independence. I don't know what to tell you.
And, well, there's that scene in the gift shop, too, where he uses a credit card, and that is somehow how the FBI later tracks him down. But that was a really weird scene.
Yeah, he has to exit through the gift shop. And
I see what you did there.
You did. You were right across from me. but yeah, so after stealing the Declaration of Independence and rolling it up and putting it into a sleeve, which obviously was a plan to make it look like a poster.
Right.
He tries to exit through the gift shop, and they think he's stealing a poster, and so he has to buy a poster.
For $35.
For $35.
2004 money was...
$6,000, yeah. Which is, I mean, they had to raise the rates, of course, because we were going to Iraq at the time.
Right.
But yeah, and so then we ended up high-speed chase where Sean Bean, who's the bad guy, this might be the only movie I've seen him survive in a while.
Yeah.
Well, regardless, Sean Bean playing a
spoilers,
very,
the bad guy lives.
Very capable villain here.
Yeah.
But essentially, Sean Bean kidnaps Dr. Chase, who at the time is rightfully trying to get the police.
Yeah.
Well,
there's an alert, and then Harvey Keitel shows up and it's like, I'm the FBI agent in charge. Everybody just stay calm.
They call me the Wolf.
Yeah. He is playing the Wolf as an FBI agent.
And I will say, Keitel plays this movie very interestingly, and I like him. And I like that. This is a weird thing, but I think you'll understand what I'm saying here. Everyone's playing this movie at different speeds, right? Mm-hmm. Because Nick Cage is ramped up because he believes that what he's doing not only will clear his family's name, but...
Oh, yeah, because there's that line about how he's not taken seriously in academic circles.
Because the Gates apparently have been treasure hunters for generations, and everyone thinks of him as a joke, effectively. You know, Dr. Chase is a step behind because she thinks he's crazy, but catches up. And Sean Bean plays the bad guy, the treasure-hungry, at-the-expense-of-everything person. And Harvey Keitel literally is, like, leaning back. You almost imagine him looking over the evidence with a whiskey going, now we'll get these guys. But we need to wait for them to slip up a little bit. Right. You know, it's very interesting because, again, like, Harvey Keitel, I don't say he's in a different movie because he's not the cop who's a step behind. He's actually, at one point, to the movie's credit, actually catches Nick Cage. Right? Like, he plays this right, just Nick Cage gets the slip because, again, Sean Bean has all this, like, capital. Sean Bean is a Bond villain.
That was my favorite bit in the entire movie where Harvey Keitel's talking to Nick Cage. It's like, okay, we got two options. Option one, you go to prison for a long time. Option two, you help us recover the Declaration, and you still go to prison for a very long time.
He goes, is there no option three? So at this point, what do we have? We have...
Well, at this point, they take the Constitution home. They look at the
Declaration.
They find the cipher on the back, and they realize that the next clue is in the Silence Duguid letters, which John's Voight just so happened to have back in the day, but not anymore, so they have to go to Philly.
Well, I mean, and first of all, there's two steps to this scene that I actually really enjoy. First of all, John Voight is not happy to see him for obvious reasons.
Oh, yeah.
Second of all...
Oh, doesn't he, like, only get into his house after he introduces Diane Kruger as the mother of his grandchildren?
The possible mother of his
grandchildren. Possible, yes.
And then, but then, like, he has the Declaration of Independence, and he's like, you need heat. Why don't you put it in the oven for a little bit? And they're all like, we can't put it in the oven for a little bit. And so he ends up using a hairdryer and blowing on it. He goes, what are you talking about? What's this document anyway? And he picks it up and you see the first few lines of the Declaration and he loses his shit a little bit. Which is, again, I like that these people exist in the world of this movie. Right? Like, because we've done movies where you could all of a sudden see someone with the Declaration of Independence and they act like it's not a big thing.
Yeah.
John Voight kind of loses his shit for a second.
Out.
He's like,
what did you do?
What did you do? Appropriate response, right? So they get the map, they find the next clue using the Silas Goodgood letters because, again, as you alluded to, as a collector at one point he owned the letters and then did the right thing and donated them to a library.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. But he knows that the next step, one way or another, is in the. He has to go to Philly.
Yeah, to find those steampunky glasses that Ben Franklin invented.
Which are hidden in a wall behind something. This is where my favorite line takes place. This is where, in an Urban Outfitter, they're talking about how what we need to know is what time to look. Because apparently,
right,
the letters are tell them that they have this clue, which ends up with Beaton Stowe, which has to be on the Liberty Bell. And by looking at the Liberty Bell, they...
Oh, when they pay that little black kid like $1 to interpret the code when from the letters in the library.
Exactly right. And it turns out that they need to be exactly in the bell tower at 2:22 p.m., but it's already after 3. And then Justin Bartley gets the slide and goes, oh, you don't know. You don't get it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Is this how you guys feel all the time? Which is great. That's the point you were talking about, that I was just like, oh, he gets it. This is what being an asshole, like, this is the thing.
It's a very Doctor Who companion line.
Exactly right. He knows the one thing for once, so he gets to matter.
Except he was wrong about Ben Franklin inventing daylight savings time.
He says Ben Franklin's the first one to suggest daylight savings time. Whatever.
It was a satire essay. He wasn't being serious.
He was not being serious, no. And Florida just got rid of it, so there you go.
This is more like Pyongyang, where they're deliberately like a half hour behind the rest of the world.
Well, I think Iran is as well, isn't it?
Maybe, I don't know.
But regardless, they end up, as you said, they pull a brick away from the wall of Liberty, or Independence Hall, excuse me, and they find these weird kooky glasses. At that point, there's another kind of action-ish sequence where Diane Kruger and Justin Bartha are attacked by Sean Bean and his cronies, and it's at this point that Nick Cage is arrested by Harvey Keitel.
Harvey Keitel and the hitman from Mulholland Drive. He's one of the FBI.
Oh, that's right. He is, isn't he? That's funny. And Nick Cage gets the kind of Faustian bargain that you talk about. And he agrees to essentially help Harvey Keitel because he's like, you know, this is a very kind of patriotic scene. This is a fairly patriotic movie.
Well, I mean, that entire scene, they're like practically playing Battle Hymn of the Republic in the background. It's like, glory, glory, hallelujah.
I like the idea that you're losing your voice and you're trying to break into song now. This is going to get more and more pathetic.
It's just that sort of scene. There's something about it that stirs my heart.
Yeah, I mean, I do like that they're filming in, like, Philadelphia and stuff, and it, like, really does look old and kind of classy. They do this movie well, like...
I don't know, I just think it's pandering, because it's them pretending like they're doing it well. It's like, oh, well, Philadelphia was an old American city. If we film there, people think we're being smart.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, they could have filmed a scene in Boston, or, I mean, they filmed in New York as well. I mean, the thing about it is... You were talking about Da Vinci Code. Da Vinci Code barely sets foot in Italy, really. You know, like, the exterior scenes are. But, I mean, like, Lara Croft Tomb Raider, it's 100% CGI.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, it's also – I'm sure it's all some South Hollywood, like, warehouse that they set up all these things, which is fine. But, like, here there's texture a little bit. Anyway, let's speed up. At this point...
Well, they find the glasses, and then Nick Cage makes that deal with Keitel, and then there's that scene on the battleship.
In New York City.
And Nick Cage jumps off and gets recovered so they can find that little underground tomb under, what is it, Old Trinity Church?
The Trinity Church, exactly right.
At the intersection of Broadway and Wall Street, which is another clue.
Which is another clue. It's all, I mean, this is the most backwards worked thing ever, but there is, I mean, that's where the Trinity Church is. Mm-hmm. At that point, they use the glasses on the declaration, they get everything together, and they figure out it's underneath a grave, the Parkington Lane. Mm-hmm. And at this point,
it's that scene from The Last Crusade with Indiana Jones and that old cemetery under the library.
Exactly. And, I mean, what they do here is literally... Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Last Crusade. It's the first one, Raiders of the Lost Ark, where they're in the final temple and they're trying to get the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, and it looks cool. I mean, they go down a winding staircase, they find an empty room.
That guy falls to his death.
Bottomless pit is a pretty terrible way to go, I think.
It's an old-fashioned Disney trope. I mean, you need to imply death, but it can't be too violent.
Nothing in this movie is very violent. There's gunshots, and he has the Declaration of Independence in front of him, so it's bulletproof glass. I mean, it is what it is, but it's
was actually okay.
That was fine. I mean, but that's a very good director, like, out. That's him saying, we need to have a gunfight, but we can't have anyone get actually wounded. How do we do it? Well, this is bulletproof glass. Why don't we... Yeah, okay. The fact that it weighs probably 600 pounds and no one could wave it around like that doesn't really matter.
Except
but...
Nick Cage. I mean, he is a superhuman.
He is a superhero. He is the best of us, as we find out later. And then we literally have a treasure room out of Aladdin.
Yeah, well, there's that... it kind of reminded me of the... is that chamber in The Mummy?
Oh, very much so. It is, absolutely. And they... and that's like 4 years before this, 5 years before this. And like even to the point where he has the kind of torch and he puts it down in the oil and the whole thing ignites. And we even have Scrimshaw Ex Machina as he puts the pipe in the wall and opens it up to the treasure room.
Oh, we're skipping one bit before, which is how they get rid of Sean Bean because he's in the church with them at the time. And they give him a bullshit clue about Paul Revere's ride.
Right, where they in fact intentionally get it wrong because... I was like, that doesn't sound right. And I knew the answer, and it turned out to be, oh, yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's two lanterns, guys, because the British come
by. Did Paul Revere, like, get arrested by, or, like, stopped by British forces on
his
ride?
And he covered himself in rum before he left, so they thought he was just a drunk driving erratically. And so they let him go. That's true. And he was one of four people riding, but Paul Revere was well-known. In history, so he gets the poem written at him. Well, I mean, but I mean, in general, like, people still have Revere steel, or silver, because he was a silversmith. And...
Well, I always thought, my understanding was that they wrote the poem at him simply because the poet, Longfellow, right?
Yeah.
He couldn't think of any words that rhymed with the last names of the other two guys, so he went with Paul Revere because you will hear Paul Revere.
Yeah.
That was it. It was laziness.
Well, and, I mean... Paul Revere also did a good job of advertising himself in his own time. Mm. You know, I mean, there's a reason why people know John Hancock and John Adams as well. They're good at self-advertisement. Regardless, at this point, we see the treasure of the ages of the Illuminati. Is it?
It's
the Knights Templar.
Templar, Freemason treasure that they've collected for millennia.
And at this point, they escape, having found
scrolls from the Library of Alexandria. I'm just sort of thinking, those all burned.
They all, I mean, that's the thing that bothers me about this. I mean, you can even do the Egyptian thing, because people were raiding those tombs forever. Okay. But you could have gone with, like, the Indiana Jones thing. Find Catholic treasures, like, find religious artifacts. Mm-hmm. But, like, you can't rewrite, like, because the Knights Templar are a thing that existed in the Crusades.
For all of them, like, what, 10 years?
Longer than that, but still, like, they essentially set up the first banking system in the world, so people assume they had a lot of power because banking is evil, is kind of the metaphor. I mean, that's what the metaphor is. However, the idea that they had infinite everything, whatever, you can argue that's essentially why they got destroyed. They didn't go back in time 600 years to get stuff from this Library of Alexandria. This is not magic. However, it is a cool scene. I like a treasure scene. Everyone's promptly impressed. He comes out and Harvey Keitel wants to arrest him.
And then he like offers him a $10 billion bribe, I think is the line.
Yeah, and he goes, but someone has to be arrested. He goes, well, I know just the person. Mm-hmm. And they go to the Old North Church in Boston, which is where the lanterns were hung for the militiamen to see where the British were coming. At that point, the FBI swarmed them, and Nick Cage just happens to be there to wave it with Sean Bean as he's arrested, presumably for forever and ever and ever.
Amongst his friends, trespassing
on government property and stealing the Declaration of Independence, because of course it was. And in the end, of course, Nick Cage... takes, what is it, like 1% of $10 billion, which is...
Yeah, well, he like splits it with Justin Bartha.
Yeah, and presumably Dr. Chase...
Bartha, excuse me, Justin Bartha, what did I say?
Big Bartha, yeah.
Oh, boy.
And Dr. Chase, who, again, $100 million divided three ways, $33 million, is not a lot, but is plenty, rather. Mm-hmm. But your family's gone through the muck, and apparently they offered him 10%, and he said no, and you're just like, take the money!
Because... It belongs in a museum.
He actually does have that speech where he's like, it belongs in a museum, it belongs in a museum, it belongs in a museum. And you're just like, I get it belongs in a museum. take the money. They offered you the money like 100 times out of 100. You take the money, right?
Right.
It's not like you have to feel guilty about it. They offered you $1 billion. Give it to your friends. Divide it three ways. Whatever. They walk off into the distance and see.
And yeah, that's the end of the movie. Right? There's that scene of Nick Cage and Diane Kruger at their new mansion and Justin Bartha driving that luxury car, and that's it.
Driving a Ferrari. Yeah, I think it's Ferrari. Anyway, and you hated this movie.
It's just... It was one of those movies that was like, it was like Roger Ebert's right. It was like the Da Vinci Code was pretending like it was really smart, and everybody who saw it pretended like they learned something when they really didn't. It was just sort of so pretentious that way.
Yeah, now I will give the fact that not unlike a Da Vinci Code movie, the history is just bullshit.
Oh, it's they've dig, they're just pulling shit out of their ass.
Well, I mean, it's not even that it's bad history. It's that they've swove it together so it's actually history. I mean, the Knights Templar never put treasure in America, and the Masons, whatever.
Nine Masons for sure signed the Declaration.
I mean, yeah, so he's right. Right, exactly. I mean, I know several Masons. It's a drinking club. They're just buddies. However, the thing about it is, at the end of the day, none of this stuff matters. I like this movie. It's kind of like watching a Bond movie. It's a hangover. Don't worry about the plot. Just let it happen.
I can see your point that it's more fun than like Tomb Raider and a lot of other things. But at the end of the day, I don't know.
I will say it looks good still. They built most of the sets, and you can see where the CGI comes in, but it's just people in actual historical locations, which again...
Oh, they actually killed that one guy who fell off at us. Staircase.
I mean, that's why you don't cut the queue in a Haunted Mansion at Disney World.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like, ultimately, it looked like something. There were things there. It wasn't all CGI, which, again, is a problem I had with Tomb Raider. So, I don't know. I thought it was fine.
I don't know. I mean, it's more fun than a lot of stuff we've done. But at the end of the day, I'm sticking with what I said. It's just way too pretentious and thinks it's way smarter than it really is.
I mean, Nick Cage is definitely portrayed as smarter than he deserves to be treated. But no, I mean, I don't think we'll ever do the sequel to this. We may one day. I say these things a lot. But I will say at the end of the day, I do kind of enjoy this movie. So yeah. This is a difference. I'm sorry. Did you have any?
No, I'm just saying I'm not going to begrudge you if you enjoy it. I just didn't.
With that, we're out of time, but I will give us our hint for next week. What am I going to say about this movie? This ain't your mama's Jaws.
Oh.
So stay tuned next week and every future week when we put your little bit of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Myopia Defender Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burns. The theme song is Caroline by The Serenaders, and their music is available on Amazon. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. And tune in next week when we put another little piece of your past on trial. Thanks!
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.